Thanks for tuning in to Organic Matters. Take a little bit of time this morning to talk about a new federal report that warns of accelerating impacts from sea level rise even quicker than we thought they were going to happen. I'll start talking about this about a place I've been to, San Agustinillo, Mexico. As the rising ocean encroaches on this little, it's a little spit of sand connected to San Agustinillo's beaches and then directly to the rocky headland along Mexico's southern Pacific coast. Local fishermen say it's getting harder and harder to find a place to beach their outboard motored skiffs after catching snapper, tuna, and dorado in those warm Pacific waters. With no harbor, the boats speed out of the water and onto the sand, and as they do, I've watched them a bunch. The driver just yanks the propeller up just as the bow hits the dry beach. High tides during the last couple of years, though, have regularly cut really steep bluffs in the sand, and sometimes it is impossible for them to get all their boats ashore. The boats for whaling, dolphin, and turtle spotting are also being marooned, and that eats into Mexico's economically important tourism industry, which actually probably makes more money than the fishing industry. This is a new phenomenon. Down there, they knew the sea was coming, but none of them thought that it would change this much this fast. Sometimes now, they say they can't even catch fish. It only used to happen like this, a few weeks every year after the big hurricanes would come through during the rainy season. But now it's happening several times a year and year after year after year. Because now global warming is actually speeding up geological change at a pace tangible to the span of a lifetime or two, or for that matter, even for a few years. Many residents of the coastal southern Mexico down there don't know that the sea around them is likely to rise another 15 or 20 inches in the next 20 or so years. They're just unaware of it. These projections were confirmed Tuesday by an updated report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and NASA, using new satellite data and climate models along with improved evaluations of historic data from the tide gauges dating back as far as 100 years or more. What we're reporting today is historic, said NOAA Administrator Rick Spinrad, who told Americans that on average, sea level at their coast will climb at least 10 to 12 inches in the next 25 to 30 years and 2 feet by the end of this current century. And I might add, in looking into it, that estimate is actually on a conservative side. It fails to curb emissions that will cause even greater impacts if we don't change our ways a bit. Like Cruz, Nicole Bailoff, director of NOAA's National Oceanic Service, has witnessed the accelerating sea level rise just during her lifetime. And so have I, incidentally, during my lifetime. I grew up all up and down both the Gulf Coast in the Florida-Georgia area and, of course, in the Texas Gulf Coast area. And we know the ocean and shores were always changing. But these are not the kind of changes that I grew up knowing. It's just totally different. It's a profound increase in coastal flooding with storms and heavy rainfall and high tide floods more and more often. One such occurrence I have actually been either fortunate or unfortunate to have seen a few times, and that's in Charleston, South Carolina. When the king tides come, and that's a kind of a made-up term, what it really is, it's actually the perigean spring tides that come about 3 or 4 times a year when the sun and the moon and everything line up to give you the highest possible high tide. When that happens now, with no storms or anything in Carolina, especially in Charleston, the downtown area of the city gets flooded and they have to put sandbags up. The water comes up into their city already. That's with no storm tides or anything. This new report confirms that things are going to get bad faster than we thought, said Andrea Dutton, a sea level rise research expert at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She said the report shows that there will be a major shift in flooding patterns in the United States coastal lines at or before, probably before, 2050, driven largely by nothing but sea level rise. That kind of language, that's NOAA's sending a red flag warning up, folks, she said. We're grappling now, trying to catch up to the changes that have already happened. But because it's accelerated, it's going to be a whole other level that we're going to be dealing with. We can see this freight train coming more than a mile away and not sure what to do about it. This report also raises concerns about sea level. tipping points, we call them, including a rapid increase in the melting of polar ice shelves, we've seen it this year again, that could spur a much faster rise. If the frozen ice shelves around Antarctica start losing stability, and they seem to be, or if ice cliffs start fracturing off huge slabs, the system goes past a threshold, and we just really can't stop this if we don't let ourselves get ahead of it as soon as possible. This may not sound startling to you think about it, but right now we're measuring sea level rise in millimeters per year. But as we go to that crossing point, that will go up to centimeters per year. You never know where the tipping point is until you pass it. And right now it looks like we're at or very close to more marine ice sheet instability than we thought we'd have for another 50 years, coming much sooner, much faster. But the tipping point is clearly close enough that everything possible should be done to prevent Antarctic ice shelves from retreating further and faster than they already are. And I do need to mention here, there are also land-based tipping points related to this sea level. While sea level rises gradually, it's already close to much of the coastal infrastructure in our United States, with seawater inundating drainage systems and even drinking water supplies in a number of cities along our coast. Along some coasts, natural features like dunes and marshes may be holding the sea back for a bit, but once that sea level rises above those, it can spread inland. A big concern, for instance, in Florida, where I've been, where a lot of territory is actually barely above sea level, sometimes just by a few inches or a foot or so. It's in essence, we're filled with a brim already down there. And if you get over the lip, it's going to come a long way. This latest report includes a detailed map of sea level rise and federal agencies and researchers that have other tools that can show how rising sea levels affect American coastal communities block by block. You can look your area up. There are already some well-known, even though they might be expensive, ways to protect some places like flood walls, dikes, and levees, or with restored coastal ecosystems. That's working some places, especially where they're working with huge stands of mangrove forest. The coastline's going to move. There's no doubt about it, folks. And I should add here, incidentally, that just some places we know now just won't be able to persist as the water continues to rise. There are already places all over the world, whether it's Alaska, where they're having to move completely away from where they were living, a number of the islands, especially in the Pacific, the Marshall Island areas, a number of coastal cities that work along the coast, all the way along the Gulf of Mexico, the Pacific, and even the Atlantic Ocean. They're changing so much, they're having to change their entire living habitat. At some point, it may not be where they can even change it. They're going to have to move to other places. As a matter of fact, we're already moving a couple of islands of people in the Pacific completely off their own island they've been on for generations because the island's basically going underwater. So think about it. Everybody's, oh, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's happening. I may as well add this. It's not the brightest star in the sky either, but the world's glaciers probably now, we've figured out, contain less water than we previously believed. A new study found, much more accurate studies with our new satellites and everything, everybody. A new study found that freshwater supplies could peak sooner than anticipated for millions of people worldwide who depend on glacial melt for drinking water, crop irrigation, and basically everyday living. These latest findings are based on satellite images taken in the last couple of years. They are a snapshot in time. Scientists will need to do more work to connect them with the long-term trends, but they imply that further global warming will cause today's ice to vanish in many places on a much shorter timeline than we previously had expected. There may even come a point, probably not in my lifetime, but in some of yours, where water will be more of a sought-after necessity than maybe even petroleum power or solar power. Water is finite, folks, and we're not doing a very good job of protecting it. Now I'm going to change the subject totally, just for a minute or so, but I always throw these in because this is something that I've been near to, dear to, for 50 or 60 years of my life. I happen to like wolves. I happen to think they're a very important part of our ecology. I have some good friends that claim to be naturalists and hunters and want to protect the earth, and they want to kill every predator they see. They don't understand that the wolf or animals like that have every bit of a reason. Matter of fact, an important reason, maybe more important than some other animals, to keep everything in balance. A federal judge just 3 days ago, February 10th, restored the Endangered Species Act protections for the gray wolf, marking a big win for environmentalists in the high-profile fight that's raged across the western landscape for a long time, folks. In a decision that addressed three related challenges filed by the environmental group, U.S. District Judge Jeffrey White struck down the Fish and Wildlife Service's decision to remove the iconic animal from the ESA list. That's a protected list, folks. The final rule relies on the recovery of core metapopulations of wolves in the Great Lakes and the Northern Rocky Mountain area to conclude that wolves across the entire lower 48 no longer qualify for federal protection, White noted. But White, who was appointed by President George Bush to the U.S. Court for the North District of California, declared, "The service did not adequately consider threats to wolves outside of these core populations." White added that the rule concluded, with little explanation on analysis, that wolves outside of the core populations are not necessary to the recovery of the species. And in concluding, the service avoided addressing the impact of the delisting of these wolves all across the country. Folks, we probably couldn't protect our livestock back then like we can now, and we probably do have to. But a lot of this federal land that our animals are supposed to be on, we're leasing out for cheap cattle people to raise their cattle on. It's not their land. It's public land. They pay a couple bucks an acre to put their cows on it. They overgraze it. I've been out there. They abuse it. And then they want to kill every buffalo because the buffalo competes with their cow. They want to kill every wolf because they think the wolves are out there eating all their wild game animals, and they're not. They're actually helping keeping them in balance, which they've done for millions of years. So yes, everything has its place, and it has to be in its place. There are definitely areas you don't want wolves wandering around downtown LA or somewhere, but they have their place. They have their place in nature, and in the right situation, they're certainly an asset, not a liability. They keep the world in balance. They've actually rebalanced parts of the Rockies. Believe it or not, wolves brought back trees. It's a long story. It brought back vegetation that's been missing for years. Don't have time here to go through all the exact details, but wolves are an extremely valuable part, as are all carnivores, of our environment. We need to protect and take care of them just like all the other animals. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matter.